Thanks for joining another Tailwind Tip of the Trail.
Tip of the Trail by Tailwind.
By Tailwind Nutrition.
By Tailwind Nutrition.
Don, what is your tip of the trail today?
You know, my tip of the trail has to do with aid station management. Knowing what you're going to consume, put in your fuel belt, take care of business before you get there.
Be prepared.
Be prepared. Come in. You know when the aid station's coming up, especially if you're familiar with the trail, then you know absolute. If you have a GPS, you've got a pretty good sense of when it's coming up. That's the time.
Or you have your time, your watch. You know what your pace is, you know when you're going to be coming up to that aid station.
Roger that. And so it's good to think about, what do I need at this aid station? I want to make sure that, one, I drop my armbands because I have a drop bag there. This is a good chance to get rid of that. I need to pick up some new goos to replace the ones that I've gone through. I need to empty out this garbage pouch that I've been carrying around in my handheld.
All those sticky goo.
It's time to get rid of that. Those are the kind of things that do two things. One, it distracts you from what you're doing, which is a lot of running that day. So it gets you thinking race management and distracts you a bit. And then two, you don't forget stuff, because forgetting stuff can kind of demoralize you. You can say, dang it, I am not going to have a chance to get rid of these armbands for another 15 miles, and it's only going to get hotter during the day. So use your aid station as a way to stay in your game, making sure you get the things that you need, like filling up a bottle of Tailwind Nutrition.
And I think it's very important that if you are prepared, you get in and out quicker. I think a lot of people lose a lot of time. You can be a slow runner and be efficient in your aid stations and have a really, really fast race, versus being really fast and lollygagging at the aid stations.
You know, I think we counted the number of aid stations that on a recent run Western States, and I think there's like 24 aid stations. It's just an incredible number of aid stations, and if you know, sit down in a chair at each one of them, you can change the color of your belt buckle.
You can, very easily.
Yeah, or not get one at all.
Right.
So I would say the tip of the trail is really to be prepared, ready, before you get to the aid station, knowing what you're after, thinking about what you're hungry for, think about what you'd like to have, and make a plan and move through it and be efficient, like you said.
And more importantly, thank the aid station workers.
Oh, that will help you.
That's karma
times 10.
Amen. So go get some Tailwind Nutrition. Take the Tailwind Nutrition Challenge. What is that, Don?
Well, you know, the Tailwind Nutrition, all the details are on their website at www.tailwindnutrition.com. But they are so confident that you will enjoy the Tailwind experience that they will pay up to $150 of your
race entry fee.
That's what it's called, race entry fee, if you're not completely satisfied with the experience.
And what you do, this is a cool way to save money, too. By taking the Tailwind Challenge, I believe it's three of the large packets that you get at a reduced rate. There's a discounted rate for three large packets so that you can go train for this for your upcoming race and use it in your upcoming race. And if you're not completely satisfied and like what Tailwind Nutrition does for you in your training and your racing, they will reimburse up to that limit your race entry fee.
Scott, you know, I'm really, really impressed with how many people are liking the Tailwind product.
I you know, one of these days we need to ask how many refunds they've offered. I don't think they have.
I
think it's a pretty easy bet.
I just know that firsthand, the people that I tell about it or have, you know, put a sample into their hand and let them taste it, they like it, and that's important. You got to like what you're fueling up with out there. It makes for a more enjoyable experience, especially if there's a little science behind it, and I know there is.
And it tastes good.
You know, I like the Naked, Tailwind. I was skeptic.
I haven't tried it yet.
Scott, it is like drinking coconut water.
I don't like coconut.
It's not like coconut water at all. It's the opposite of coconut water. It's light and delightful.
Okay.
With calories, and it doesn't taste sweet.
Well, I have some, and I'm looking forward to trying it.
Go out and run?
Moss.
And drink?
Tailwind. More.
Welcome to another Petzl Light Tip. This one, we're going to talk about sighting with running at night.
Sighting. All right.
Not like that. Not like sighting with a rifle.
Not like
sighting. A little bit different.
Not like sighting an animal on the trail. What kind of sighting are you talking about, Faith Goss?
I'm talking about tracking the ground and where you're going with your eyes and your headlamp.
Good. You know, a first thought comes to my mind when you say that is that we should probably look and see how we're sighting during the day, how far off our field of vision is for day running, and then place the lamp at that location so that we're not sacrificing our pace. You cannot run fast looking at your feet. You just can't.
You know, I think that's one of the biggest mistakes that I made when I first started night running is, well, it was compounded because I didn't have a very light headlamp. And so I turned my headlamp closer to my feet mm-hmm. so I could see what was in front mm-hmm. of me. And that was too late. By the time I was seeing obstacles, it was too late. Mm-hmm. And so I had to slow my running down quite a bit. So I think, let me ask you this question. Do you find that at night you're looking closer than you are during the daytime?
Well, I think I fall into that. And that's why I think Faith's topic of sighting is good to recognize that you need to continue looking out your field of vision mm-hmm. with similar to your daytime running.
I would say for me, I tend to look further away at night because I want to be able to anticipate
bears.
What's ahead. No, well, what's ahead obstacle-wise? Well, yes, bears, but what is ahead obstacle-wise and how I'm going to navigate to get to that obstacle and get over it.
So do you you constantly look out ahead of you, or mm-hmm. you go out and back?
Yeah, out and back. I try, I tend to sweep, go out and back. But then depending on what type of headlamp you have, Don on our last tip was talking about a headlamp that provided field of vision that was greater than if you had just like an advanced headlamp that can be just a really narrow beam. So choosing a headlamp that has a wider beam. And I'm not sure if that's, you know, labeled on the package or what, because I haven't invested in a headlamp in a long time. But I think finding a headlamp that illuminates a greater spectrum would probably be more beneficial if you're a sweep runner like me, where I look ahead and back, ahead and back.
Does that get you sick?
You know, when I first started running at night, and I think I talked about on our one of our last tips, is if I haven't run at night in a while, and when I first started running at night, I would come home and feel like nauseous.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it was from the headlamp bouncing around or maybe from my sweeping, but...
Well, you know what? I think you
got to stop that sweeping, Faith.
I know.
You know, I was going to say, you know, Petzl makes the Now headlamp, mm-hmm. which has, I can't remember the technical term, but it has a sensor on it that automatically adjust the brightness of the lamp mm-hmm. for how close you are to the object. I wonder if that would help you with your sweeping so that when you're looking far away, it actually increases the power mm-hmm. to the brighter power. And then as you come closer, or if you're looking at your watch, it automatically mm-hmm. reduces the light so that you're not getting sunburned by your light.
I'd probably run out of battery faster than you guys then. If I'm always looking ahead, I'm probably using more juice.
Possibly.
You know, that Now has rechargeable battery, and it also has one that you can just stuff in your bag and just quickly plug it right in. You don't have to fumble with, you know, the four small batteries and try to get positive, negative, whatever. You just plug that thing right back on.
Well, you know, I've discussed this briefly on a previous tip, but that Now has that rechargeable battery. But more importantly, the thing that I like more than that is it has a battery indicator. Just like your phone has bars, it has a battery bar so that you know, quickly, look at it before you go out that night or whatever, and if you need to, you can do a quick charge.
Just plug it in, and
it's a USB charge, so if you're on your way to the trail, you can just plug it into your USB mm-hmm. in your car.
Charge it with your Garmin.
There you go.
Charge it when you charge your Garmin.
Yes.
Don't use your Garmin to charge your lamp.
Negative, yeah.
Got it.
Charge it at the same time. It can be part of your ritual. You come home from the trail, you charge your Garmin and your Petzl.
You're big on rituals.
You've noticed.
I have. So let's go strap on a lamp.
Yeah. Have fun at night.
Run at night. It's different than the day. I like it more.
It's cooler.
That it is. So go out and run with your Petzl.
At night.
Moss.
Are we recording?
I'm not nervous. I got this. Let's just do it.
Yeah. Welcome to...
No, thanks for joining.
I do welcome to.
That's wrong.
But I do it wrong.
I'll say I'm Faith Goss. You say I'm Don Freeman. Faith Goss is not one of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
And action. Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. I'm Don Freeman.
And I'm Scott Warr.
Today we're going to talk a little about pacing and crewing, Scott.
Yes, it's that time of season where we are running races.
And well, when aren't we running races out there?
When we're training.
That's true. Now, you know, we contacted Dominic Grossman and Katie DeSplinter, and they've been on podcasts on Trail Runner Nation in the past. And it's always great to have them around and talk running because they live running.
What, you know, we've had them on a number of different times. The one that stands out to me that I really enjoyed was the one on mountain running.
Mountain running. It's I believe Dominic said it's like an orchestra. I don't know. What did you say, Dominic Grossman?
What did you mean?
You know, I was talking about bow on a violin where, you know, your legs are just moving perfectly and it's very smooth and it's... looks great, sounds great, feels great.
That's good stuff. So I encourage you to go back and listen to that. Let's talk a little bit about Dominic and Katie both and some of their accomplishments, Scott, on our end.
They are accomplished racers, trail runners. Dominic has won Angeles Crest 100, which is a brutal, brutal, hot, and mountainous course.
True. I'll vouch for that.
He has many more top 10 finishes than I can count on my fingers and toes.
Katie's been out there on that same course. She has also put her notch on Ozark Trail 100 Mile as she has won that race.
And last year got her silver buckle at Western States.
Correct. So these are a couple of runners that have not only had crews and pacers, but giving back to the community as they do. They have been crews and pacers. So let's talk a little bit about what crews do, what pacers do. Scott, before we get rolling, tell us a little bit about what a crew is, and then we'll hand it over and let Dominic and Katie talk about what a pacer is.
Before we get into that, I think there's a bit of neat information that we need to share.
Well, bring it on.
We are recording this podcast pre-Western States 100. Although as the listener, you're probably listening to this. Well, you will be listening to this after Western States, so you'll know who won. But Dominic is pacing. Who, Dominic?
The champ, Timothy Olsen.
So that's pressure. That's why I want to hear what Dominic has to say today.
It would be pressure for you and I, Scott. It's not pressure when you have wheels like Dominic.
No, it's still pressure. He could get dropped.
No.
And so, oh, that's tough, Katie. You're supposed to be supporting your man and giving him just, you know, all kinds of accolades of you're the man, Dominic.
She's projecting because last year she paced me at Hard Rock and she was nervous about getting dropped. So
I didn't.
She was nervous, though. She was nervous.
Well, you know, and then we have a opposite end of the spectrum. Well, that's probably the wrong phraseology. But Katie let us know that she's also pacing someone for the last 40 miles of Western States that she's never met before.
Wow. So now, quite a contrast. You know the history of Tim Olsen. You can see his splits and you can study and see what's going on. Katie, how did you come across pacing someone you've never met and you don't know and don't have any running history with? And then we'll dive down into what it takes to pace these different types of runners. So give us some history, Katie.
Well, a friend that I run with out here, it's his cousin's wife, and he was supposed to pace her, but he had to go to a wedding and was looking for somebody to take the job, and I was the first name that came up, and I was happy to do so.
Awesome. I mean, you know, it's great to get to pace at Western States. You're part of the actual day and get a bib to put on, so it's fun and exciting. And there's some responsibility as a pacer too to get in shape. You just can't show up to the game and not be ready.
Yeah, exactly. That was the first 100 miler I ever went to as a crew, and that was 5 years ago. And so every year I've been back either crewing, pacing, or running myself. It always just seems to work out.
It's kind of like a party you can't miss.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's talk about, I mean, we're talking about crewing and pacing. They're two very distinct, different roles at a race. Wouldn't you agree, Don?
Absolutely. As a crew, you can gather in a car or a, you know, some type of van and follow your runner from aid station to aid station and just be there at the ready for whatever they may need.
Yeah. So you're following the runner virtually,
right?
In a van or whatever kind of vehicle, and you're going from aid station to aid station and making sure that they have the necessary equipment.
They need a gear change. If they need something in an ice chest that might be something they can't get from an aid station, you're
right there
at the ready. A change of shoes, a pat on the back, a sign holding it up and yelling their name, you know, whatever they may need, you're there.
So let me pose this question to the group. Put on your thinking caps.
On.
And you have one thing. As a runner, what is the most important thing that your crew can do for you? The one thing, and hopefully we'll get four different answers here, but what is one important thing that you look for in a crew? So Don, I'm going to start with you.
Thanks.
Katie and Dom can...
I'm closer, so maybe yeah. I'm ready. Okay. I would say just being there. You know, I'd say just making it to that aid station where we agreed upon and having just a familiar face, some moral support, someone that I could say, man, that was hard, and have them say, wow, you really look good. It doesn't look like it's hard. Just some of that, just them being there is probably the most important thing.
I'm going to throw something in there that I think is very important for a crew, and that's in preparation for the run.
Mm-hmm.
They need to study the course, I think.
At least the driving directions.
Exactly, and you mentioned one thing. I mean, it's important for them to get there and get there early so that they're prepared, and I think that's one of the... You know, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, a crew kind of rushes to the next aid station and then waits, and there's a lot of waiting involved.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's important for that crew to be there at the aid station, so I think that's a good one.
Let's throw it to Dominic and Katie. What do you look for in a crew?
I look for people that are going to be positive, that are going to just keep on giving me... Whether I've got good news or bad news about, you know, if I'm doing well or doing bad, but they're going to be positive and they're not going to, you know, get negative or anything, but, you know, just emotionally and everything else, you know, support me.
So you don't want the crew to be saying, I'm tired. I've been here for 2 hours waiting for you.
Yeah. Hurry up and finish. Cause we're not going to make it through the night. You know, that's like, Because when you're, you know, vulnerable in a 100-mile race, you may actually feel bad that you have all these people out there for you. You may, you know, not run as well. So,
yeah, that's a good point. If you have a crew out there as a runner, that may be a motivating factor to continue going when things are bleak and you think, gosh, you know, it'd be just as easy for me to call this a day. But you have people out there, too, and so you don't want to let them down. So crew can be a motivation, too. I would say you need anything you can to pull yourself through those tough moments. And if the crew's part of it, then good. How about you, Katie?
For me, I always try to pick people that will always continue to let me have control of the race and never forget that it's still my race and not theirs.
Mm.
And I know that kind of, that might sound a little bit negative, but really what I mean is for two ways of really, you know, I want their expertise and want people that know what they're doing, but presenting that to me as options and allowing me to still feel like it's my race and that I'm in control. Because if I ever feel like I've lost control, mentally I kind of lose the whole point of doing the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. And then also, you know, the other side of that is definitely not somebody who's very strong-minded, who thinks that, you know, maybe they've run Western States 5 times before, they've always been there, and they think they know the exact way to do it. You know, everybody's different, and they, you know, if they're not 100% behind my plan or don't agree with it, I don't want them out there at mile 80 trying to put their own, I guess, spin on it or their own opinions in. And I've actually had that experience before, and it didn't really work out so well. So I really try to always stick with people that are always just going to work really well together as a team, not kind of try to take charge and make it about themselves.
So I throw this to you, Katie, and anybody else that would want to pitch in, that when you show up to an aid station and say you need to take a chair for a second to get something attended to, or you know, whatever it might be, that you're going to be the one that determines when it's time to get up, and having someone pick you up by the arm and say, come on, let's get going, that isn't going to work.
Well, no, I mean, sometimes that's necessary, but it's more of like, hey, you know, it's been 5 minutes. I think, you know, you said you didn't want to spend more than 5 minutes in an aid station. Do you think it's time to get going? And, you know, I tend to be the type of person, if somebody presents it to me like that, I'll either say, no, I really need a couple more minutes, I need to attend to this, or it's like, ah, you're right, okay, I'll get up, you know. Whereas if somebody gets in my face and yells at me like, you need to get out of here right now, that immediately does not work for me at all. It's just, like Dom said, it goes back to positive people and just presenting everything like a conversation. Really, the last like few hundreds that I've done, I've been really fortunate to have people that everything was just a conversation. There was no yelling or anything needed. And even, you know, I remember last year at Western States at mile 80, I was sitting in a chair and I was starting to get a little bit overwhelmed, and Susanna Bond was one of my pacers, and she just looked at me and she goes, hey, Katie, we're not going to have a pity party. Like, there doesn't need to be any tears. You just get your food down and get out of here. And that's all it is. And it was very calm. It wasn't like a don't cry, don't do this, which would have not worked at all. But the way that she said it, it was just kind of like, yeah, you're right. And again, it was a conversation, and I don't know, that works for me. And I found when I do that for other people, it works really well as well.
You know, you bring up a good point, that familiarity with your crew is important, and communication of what you expect of them as they're going out and crewing, you know, and letting them know how to communicate with you when you're out on that run. Sometimes if you're not as familiar with them, I mean, most of us that have had crew are very familiar with us and know what to say, when to say, and what not to say. But if you have a crew that may not be as familiar with you, it may be a good idea to sit down before the race and say, let me tell you how I want to be treated.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys give instructions to crew? You know, just some expectations, or here's what works for me, so they kind of have a guideline?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, personally, I feel much more confident about, you know, coming to an aid station and having, you know, there not being any loose ends, you know, not too many decisions to make, just a real, you know, simple, fluid, like teamwork.
A pit crew.
Yeah, a true pit crew. And you know, like when Scott Jurek was winning all his Western States, he was just coming in an aid station, throwing his bottles in the air and sliding two new ones on and not breaking stride. And, I don't know if everyone else needs to be that fast or that efficient, but you know, that that's sort of like a really great feeling as a runner when you know that your crew is just totally, you know, invested in you, and you've given them all information, and they're you know, working in sync with you, and that gives you a lot more, I think, just like emotional and, you know, power that you have. You know, not just, you know, you and your own power pushing you 100 miles through the wilderness. It's you and your crew, you know, and they're not going to let you stop, and you feel like you can sort of relax because they're going to take care of everything else other than the running.
Well, and I think that's a very good point, that that your crew needs to be organized and able to think about what may happen as their runner is coming in that they're crewing. You know, what scenarios are going to be happening? Well, you know, you have to fill up their water bottles. You know that they're going to need this and that. But maybe, you know, look through some scenarios of what if their stomach has turned? Or what if they have blisters on their feet? And you need to be organized so that you can be that efficient pit crew, rather than going into an aid station and your crew looking at you and say, what do you want? What do you need?
Yeah, it's interesting because for some people, that works, of just having a bag, and they, you know, they want to sit down, and they'll, I've done that before where I've crewed people and they just have a bag and they're like, no, I'm going to come in and I'm going to make the decision when I get to the aid station. For me personally, I plan things out meticulously, knowing that full well that I might not stick to that plan. But for the most part, I pack a shoebox with Ziplocs per aid station of the stuff that I'm going to leave with. Normally for me, it involves them just taking out the Ziploc and putting in my extra handhelds. And then I just come in and switch handhelds, and that's really it. And I also like to make an Excel sheet per aid station, not only of kind of like the goal time, the best possible scenario and the worst possible scenario. So for example, like at Western last year, if I thought my goal time would be around 24-hour pace, it was that pace plus what the best time I possibly could get there and the worst time, so that they knew. Not only did I do that in time, I also put like by hours of like, it could be anywhere from an hour and a half to 3 hours between aid stations, so that it gave them time to know how far to drive and things like that. I know the math gets really, really crazy out there, especially when you're tired. So it's really nice to have one document to be able to look at of like, okay, so she said she's on pace. She said the best time she could possibly get to the next aid station is this time. And she looks like she's doing pretty well. So it looks like we've got 2 hours. We do or don't have time to stop for food or gas or whatever it is. So there's that. They also have everything laid out of what they need. And I also do a document by aid station of kind of like a little checklist, like refill the bottles, do this, make sure I take this, make sure I leave with this, and bring the bag of extras as well. And I know that sounds like ridiculously planned out, but honestly, me just putting that all together helps me strategize my race and helps me start to break down the race as well. So I'm actually thinking about that, you know, a week or two before the race, and I'm kind of fine tuning it based on the shape that I'm in or what sort of information that I've been able to gather from other people who have run that particular race before. And it, you know, it's actually kind of sadistically fun for me to. And then it also, even when I'm thinking out there, it's like, okay, all right, I have this new bottle. I just have 3 gels. I just got to get 3 gels by the next aid station. And it's, it helps it to be more organized for me as well. So most of the time, even though they have the documents and everything's written out, I already know what I'm planning on doing before I get there as well. So it makes it, I don't know, it makes it really smooth.
Dominic, I'm interested. Are you that meticulous in your crew planning with a spreadsheet and everything?
No.
Well, we can talk about varieties, and you know, like I think I'm somewhere in the middle. Like one of my favorite stories is last year at UROC, I was working with the my Jinji sponsors, and Dave Mackey was also there, and he's of course, you know, particular about having his Vitargo. So he mixed up a pitcher of Vitargo at 6 a.m. And, you know, as the race was getting ready to start, he handed it to the Njinji guys, Andy, and said, here, give me this at the aid stations. And it's just an open pitcher, like, you know, like a pitcher of beer. Practically. So he put in the seatbelt next to him in the car, and was just kind of, all right, there goes nothing on, you know, the windy roads of Appalachian. You know, it was just like... And I'm a little bit better than that. I don't just give people pictures of sports string, but no, like I think of, you know, giving my crew enough to, you know, reasonably, you know, have everything organized and ready, and that they're sort of engaged in the race too, that they know what I should be eating, you know, what I should be doing. You know, if I come into an aid station and none of my food's eaten, then they know they need to remind me, because I may be out of my mind, you know, Captain Ahab syndrome. So I give them a little bit of, you know, guidance and a little bit of a game plan. And then,
you write your gels down on like a course map in your bad handwriting. So that's, yeah.
can your crew interpret that handwriting?
Usually they can.
You know, one thing that I think is important too, in preparation, if you're going to be a crew member, I think you need to know what the rules are for the race. You know, the runner, in fact, most races that I've run, the runner is responsible for their crew and responsible for them keeping the rules. But I think as a crew member, I think you should take a few minutes and go to the race website or whatever instructions were sent and find out what, as a crew, what you can and can't do. Some aid stations you're not allowed in, some you are, and adhere to those rules.
Hey, what distance do you guys need a crew or like a crew? I mean, is it a 50K, 50 mile, 100K? I only use them for 100 mile. You know, where do you look at your race and say, ah, this is a crew race?
I think for me, it's always 100 miler is the only time I really ask people. Dom and I, if we tend to be doing different 50 milers, we'll help each other out at them. Especially for Dom, it's really easy. It allows him to get in and out really quickly. He won't even break stride in a 50 miler. And obviously for me, it's always nice to, as well, I don't like to stop at aid stations any longer than I have to. So we'll help each other for that. But I never go out of my way to ask anybody to help me other than for a 100 miler.
Have you ever, that just raised a question, Katie, have you ever had somebody volunteer to be a crew that you didn't want at the race?
and please mention names.
I will say yes, but I will not mention any names.
Okay, so if you've ever crewed Katie, you may be on the list.
Be careful.
That, me.
That includes Dom.
Oh, that's rough business there.
So let's move on to pacing. You know, both of you are going to be pacing at Western States. And I want to – my first question is to you, Katie, because I've been in your shoes before where you are pacing someone at Western States that you have never met before. We talked a little bit about how you met that person and how you got hooked up with them. Have you had conversations with them on what their expectations of for the race? What, you know, what kind of goals they have and how they expect you to be a good pacer?
No, I mean, so far it literally has just been a couple emails between me and her husband, actually.
Oh, perfect.
Actually, the husband or the cousin. But we're all, Dom and I are actually heading up to up that way on Wednesday night. We'll be there on Thursday. So we're planning on meeting in Squaw either on Thursday or Friday to go over all that. I know she definitely wants to break 24 hours. That's her goal. And apparently she's been being coached by the infamous AJW. So so she's in pretty good contention and has a lot of experience and everything. So I'm really looking forward to meeting her. She's been running ultras for a really long time. And you know, 40 miles is a great long time to get to know somebody. So why get to know her now?
Yeah, you'll find out during the run.
Exactly.
Now, Scott, you mentioned at the beginning of the podcast that you hooked up with a runner through similar type of, you know.
Well, I'll tell you how I did it. And one of the, I don't know if other races do this, but Western States has the ability where if you don't have a pacer, you can go on their bulletin board and say, I need a pacer. This is what I expect to finish in or what I'd like to finish in. And this is what I'm looking for in a pacer. And you can go on there and peruse those and say, you know what, I'll email this guy. And that's how I did it. I wanted to pace somebody one year at Western States. And so I got hooked up with this Korean guy out of New York City, first 100 miler. And we spent some good quality time together. It was a lot of fun. And like you, Katie, I actually, you know, I was not a real experienced pacer. And
wait, so not like her.
Well, no, let me rephrase that.
I was
going to say, like you, I didn't have very many conversations before the race. Now, you probably will as you get up to Squaw and you're a smarter pacer than I was with this gentleman. And, you know, I knew what time he was going to be coming into the aid station where I'd be picking him up. And that's about all I knew about
him. You knew his name? You didn't know what he looked like?
I didn't. I knew his bib number. And so I was looking for a Korean with a bib number. And
with a New York accent.
And it really wasn't a bad thing, but I think that it would have been better to kind of know what he expected of me, because there are a lot of times where maybe I was pushing him a little bit harder than what he wanted to go. and we had kind of had to learn. We did learn,
right,
in the time we were together.
Yeah, so maybe some of the first questions that you ask, you know, even if you're familiar with a runner, then it's pretty easy. But if I was picking up somebody, I think I would ask them, so what are you looking for? Do you want me to talk a lot? Do you want me to shut up? Do you want me just to run in front, run behind? And some races have their own rules of running in the front or behind, and some races don't. But you really need to get what their expectations are, you know? And there are times to push and times to pull. And how do you know, especially if it's a new runner?
So let me throw this out at you. I know we've talked about this before on the podcast, and we've actually done the round robin question. And I'll throw this out just because there are people that haven't heard that. Which would you rather have, a pacer that you know real well that doesn't know the course, or someone that you don't know that does know the course? Don?
Oh, you're starting with me again, Scott. You know, yeah. I thought I was going to get a pass on that.
You've answered this before.
But it doesn't mean I have the same answer. You know what? I think I want somebody that I know, because I feel like it could probably push through just about anything if I have a relationship with that person. And, you know, we could figure out that we're still going uphill and then now we're going downhill, right? And I would always question whether that guy's course knowledge was that strong. I wouldn't know. But I think I would like to link arms with a comrade that I know, that we've pushed through harder times, and they know me inside and out. And so I would feel more comfortable pushing through with a friend.
Katie, how about you?
Definitely somebody I know. It's my responsibility to know the course and figure that out. It's more about, for me, the pacer is really just more about the company of having someone to talk to, and obviously making sure that I don't like completely go off course and end up alone and shivering somewhere. But yeah, definitely is more important for me to make sure that the dynamic between me and that person is good, rather than them just simply knowing what they're doing or being a good runner.
How about you, Dom?
Yeah, it's funny. Actually, I hate it when someone tries to tell me a lot about the course, because
you already know a lot about it.
No, I'm like, I just take everything as like a bold-faced lie when I'm in pain. When they're like, you know, oh, just another quarter mile. And I'm like, quarter mile? Do you mean like a quarter of 10 miles? Do you mean 2.5 miles? Like, what the hell are you like? Everything is just, you know, like I like to just take the course as it is and just not worry about, you know, the climb's hard. Okay, how hard? You know, like I just, if I know the course, it's awesome. I just, you know, I pick it apart in my head. If I don't know the course, I kind of run, you know, with just as much information as anyone else would give me, you know. Oh, the climb's long. Okay. Oh, it's this many miles long, you know, but that's a relative thing, you know, so.
I've got a comment on that, but Scott, let's hear your choice, and then I want to make a comment on course.
You know, I think we're going to have a unanimous decision here. I want to have somebody that I know.
Yeah.
I don't mind getting lost if it's with someone I know.
let's talk a little bit about course knowledge. One, even a course that you know, it's nice to have a card of some kind that you've prepped, at least for me, where I put how far to the next aid station. That's probably one of the greatest tools for me. And for someone that knows a course, I would think that would be the piece of information that I would really want from them. How much further to this next aid station, especially when I'm trying to manage my fluid, manage my food, manage whatever I'm managing. Do I have 5.2 to the next station, 8.3? I like to know that. And with the GPS watches now, you know, you almost become a course expert.
So let me ask you this question.
Mm-hmm.
What is your expectation when you pick up your pacer and for, let's say, the first 62 miles at Western States, the first 62 miles, it's been your responsibility to make sure you're drinking, make sure you're eating, knowing how many miles there is between each aid station, mm-hmm. and looking at your GPS, it's your responsibility. At mile 62, do you dump that all on your pacer? And now say, maybe that's an over-exaggeration, but are you expecting them, okay, now that I have you, you need to help me through this because I'm worrying about other things at this point. So I'm not going to pay attention to how many miles we have left. I'm going to ask you, as my pacer, to keep me informed and keep me hydrated and keep me nourished and all that sort of stuff.
Dominic, I think he was looking at you.
I know. And you,
what?
You know, it's a tough line because some runners, you know, get into a zone where they know themselves really well and they're doing a good job. And then if you argue with them and, you know, they tell you you're wrong, you know, like I know I run on very little water, you know, this is how I run. Then they waste like their breath arguing with you. If you're right, then you may save them a lot of pain and suffering, you know, because Captain Ahab syndrome again. So I don't know. I kind of like, you know, for Tim on Saturday, I'm going to tell him the distance to the aid stations. I'm going to have my GPS watch going and let him know. But, you know, if he's not like taking salt for a while, I'm just going to say, oh, do you need any salt? And I'll leave it at that. Or, oh, do you need, you know, more gels or any more water? Leave it that, and then
just a kind reminder.
Yeah, exactly.
Because by then their mind is mush.
Yeah, and then so then if they, you know, they don't want to take any more water in or any more salt, then they just say no, I'm good, and they leave it at that, and they don't get mad. And it, you know, if I feel like you know, when there's any type of friction between a pacer and a runner, it's, you know, just wasted energy. And that's like the whole magic of a good crew and a bad crew, you know, a good pacer and a bad pacer. They just add to the runner's race, and that's it at the end of the day.
Well, that's a good point, Dominic, because, you know, a pacer can subtract from a racer too if they're nagging too much. Here, have another goo. I'll have some more water. I want you to do this by. Wait a minute. You know, that's, you are now making this like it's all uphill for me. Back off. You're making this more challenging.
Although I will kind of disagree with you.
Well, go ahead.
If you know your runner,
yeah,
that you're pacing, sometimes they need that. And I will refer to my personal experience at Western States where you were kind of mean to me.
You needed
and
it,
I needed it.
That's right. I was adapting to the situation.
Yeah, and we'll get into some of the specific things that you did that I think were very good strategies for a pacer.
Okay.
But
maybe
but,
we should do
but,
that.
But
off
I would
the
say
podcast.
It all comes to the point to do you know the person that you're running with?
And what they need at the time.
And what they need. Sometimes you need a hard hand and sometimes you don't, depending on who you are.
Katie, do you turn over responsibilities to your pacer?
Well, it's interesting. when it's Dom, I know that it's just kind of an unspoken thing. He's probably going to tell me what to do. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. He's the one person that can kind of do that because we just know each other so well. And I trust him so much that I know for sure if he's telling me that, hey, I really think you need to eat, it's because he's noticed that I'm getting cranky or he's noticed that I haven't eaten in a while. And, you know, that could also be the fact that he tends to pace me in the last few miles of the race. Mm-hmm. Whereas maybe my previous pacer, a great example is, for example, my dad paced me at Ozark Trail last year and he was all nervous about it. First, because he thought he was going to get dropped. And I was like, nah, no, it's not going to happen. But what I told him was basically, hey, all I need you to do, because I tend to like to run in front. I was like, just keep an eye out. If you notice that I haven't like been raising my water bottle up or if I haven't eaten or so, I'm like, really, I try to eat every 20 to 30 minutes. So whether it's easier for you to keep looking at your watch or if you just notice that I haven't been doing it, will you say something to me like, hey, I noticed you haven't been doing this. And sure enough, it was at first it was fine, like maybe the first 10 miles or so. And this was, mind you, at miles like 70 or something. But closer to mile 80 was when he started to actually notice and he would say, you know, like, hey, I know you haven't eaten in a while. You think you should eat? And, you know, most of the time, then that's enough for me. I'm not going to like lash back. I'll either say, no, I can't right now. My stomach hurts. Remind me again in 5 minutes. Or, all right. Yeah. Thanks for reminding me. And it works out like that for me. And so it's not completely relinquishing control, but it's admitting the fact that I'm not good with math anymore and that I'm also spacing out a lot more. So I do like my pacer to kind of watch me and make sure that I'm staying on track because, like I said, I'm in a zone by that point in time.
You know, that all these conversations we're having about pacing makes me think about the word pacer, I think is a little bit misleading. Because as a pacer, you're really not pacing. Hmm. You're more of a motivator, a
psychologist,
yeah,
a doctor.
So you're not necessarily pacing. You're not trying to have them keep up with you or pacing,
right? Yeah.
Well, most of the time, but sometimes if you're, for example, when I was trying to stay under 24 hours last year at Western, I would consider that actual pacing, because Dom was in control of the time. I couldn't do math anymore, and he was basically letting me know whether it was going to happen or not and what I needed to do to get there. Like, you need to speed up or whatever I needed to do.
Yeah. It's funny how math goes away. All of a sudden, you cannot figure out any of the simple mathematic equations, subtraction, addition. That is advanced mathematics, you know. And sometimes that is the role of the pacer. If your job... as I talked to my pacer today, as we did our last run before, as I'm running Western States this coming on Saturday, and he said, "Well, what's your goal? What's your time?" And he wanted to know, because he knew that if that was in fact what we were trying to achieve, that he wanted to know whether we were good or bad based on where we were positioned. And he'll have the math and all the stats for that. So I can hand that over to him. What I can't hand over, which I experienced on a race, and I say this just for hopefully the benefit of others, is course management, watching ribbons. You know, that is something that you can't, you know, if you're a 100-mile runner, whatever, 50-mile, 100K, that I've been watching ribbons all day. I'm tired of watching ribbons. You watch the ribbons. But sometimes it takes two people to watch ribbons, because when you get lost, that's not good.
and this whole time he's looking at me, because at a race that we both know very well,
right.
I was pacing Don, and we got lost. Not bad. I mean, we just all of a sudden we were on the next trail over.
I had forgotten about that one, Scott. I was referring to another time.
Oh, yeah, right, so right. So I bring this question up. I know we're kind of bouncing around here, but as a pacer, what is your responsibility? I mean, first of all, I think it's your responsibility to know the course and be watching those trail marks. But here's the question.
Ready.
What if you get lost? What is your responsibility as a pacer?
Mm. Well, I could tell you what's happened to me. Do you guys want to, from the Southern California area, you want to chime in first or turn it back over here?
You never let that happen, but if it does happen, you quickly figure it out, and you try to, like, you know, keep it, it happens. So, okay, you know, I'm sorry I messed up, you know, let's just get back on the trail and not worry about it and then go from there.
So you're saying as a pacer, it's your responsibility to find out where you are and get you back on course.
Yeah, as long as you have enough information, unless the runner knows more than you, then you should.
Yeah.
I've never gotten anybody lost before, but I've had a runner, like, freak out and think that we were lost.
Right.
Even though I was, you know, pretty confident that we weren't, but how I kind of handled it was, I was like, okay, well, why don't you stand here and eat really quick, and I'm going to sprint back and see. I swear I saw a course marker back there. I'm just going to go double check for you. So let them stand there and eat and drink. And I sprinted back and double checked that there was a marker. And
I thought you were going to say that was a trick.
No.
You ducked around the corner, you waited for 5 minutes.
If I am 100% confident, especially if it's like, you know, if I'm pacing somebody at AC or something where I've run every single inch and I'm 100% positive, I would definitely do that same method, but as a trick, where I would just run back out of sight and be
turn,
like,
turn your headlamp off.
Yeah, exactly.
No, if you're familiar with the course, you say, march on. I am 100% confident. Let's go. But I have been where you're talking about, where as the pacer and the person freaked out, it wasn't because we were off course. I think it's your job as a pacer is to get on your horse and ride hard, to get back, find the marker, and then confirm that, no, there has not been a turn. Yeah. We're in good shape. Let's keep going. I like how, Katie, how you said, stay there in one spot, fuel yourself, get yourself healthy, and I'll go back and do the work.
Yep.
Okay. Hey, so is there any room for negotiation on? So the person says, "Here is my goal time," and you're the pacer, and all of a sudden things are starting to fall apart a little bit. Do you allow the runner to negotiate and say, "Here's our new goal," or do you try to encourage them to stay on course? How much room do you have for this negotiation as a pacer? Over to you, Scott War, since you've thrown right at me.
Oh,
were you listening to that question, Scott?
Yeah, I was.
Oh, good.
You know, again, I think it comes back to whether you know who you're running with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you know that they're giving up, but they have it in them, then there's no room for negotiation.
Right. No pity party, as Katie said.
Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly. But I think, you know, I think that in my experience at Western States, where my goal was the silver, of course, mm-hmm. I think everybody goes into
384 people, I think, or however many are going to be there,
yeah.
are all looking at silver.
But as things went wrong for me, when I picked you up as a pacer, we renegotiated.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So I think there, in that case, there is room for renegotiation, depending on what circumstances has happened.
All right. Katie or Dominic, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think you stated it perfectly. Like last year at Western, for example, like when I was in the last like hour or so of the race and I just couldn't handle the pressure anymore, I was like, what does it matter if I finish in 24:05? This is all dumb. Like, you know, you get really ethereal. You're like, what does it all mean? And Dom was like, no, we're not having an awkward car ride home because you missed the silver buckle by 2 minutes. So there was no room for negotiation with him, which I thank him for. But in all seriousness, I think that, you know, in my experience of pacing other people when they've had goals like that, it's, you know, obviously if the goal is completely out of sight, it's not going to happen anymore. It's really important to get them to pick a new goal. For example, if
yes.
it's breaking 24 hours and that's not going to happen anymore, maybe now it can still be beating the sun come up, you know, like maybe it is a difference of 30 or 40 minutes, but that's a new goal. Or maybe it's like, hey, you know, we can still finish under 26 hours. And even though maybe that was arbitrary before, it becomes a new goal and it keeps them focused on something else positive rather than being focused on not achieving the previous goal.
I think that's an excellent point, Katie. And I think that at that point in the race, the runner probably isn't thinking straight enough to be able to set that new goal. So
yeah.
I think as a pacer, it's your responsibility to come up with an achievable goal that's positive, that can keep them motivated and strong to the end.
Right. And I would say, you know, as far as negotiating is concerned, like as long as they're still within reach of that original goal, I'll continue to kind of go for that as well. It's only when that goal sort of becomes unachievable that I'll push to readjust a goal. I don't want to give up on the original goal until it's completely gone.
So here's my question for you, Dom. What is Tim Olson's goal for Western States?
Well, to win.
Yeah, I think he wants to break his old course record. So that's what we're going to be going after, you know?
Wow.
100 degree heat, nonetheless. When you have like a competitive runner and they're really, you know, chomping at the bit, you know, you have to always keep them focused on being in the lead, not at mile 10 or mile 50, but being the lead at the finish. And that's sort of an interesting, you know, thing that, you know, at Western States, I'm sure there'll be some really fast young runners out in front at the start. And then Tim, you know, like last year I watched him go through, I think it was Red Star Ridge, and he was maybe like 2 minutes back of the leaders, and he didn't have a care in the world. He knew exactly what he was doing. He looked like he was, you know, just in the perfect position, and he had no fear whatsoever. And you know, I think he probably had some positive reinforcement from his crew, you know, saying, "Oh yeah, that everyone up front's working pretty hard. You know, how are you doing? Do you feel good?" And he, you know, as all part of his underlying goal of taking the lead later in the race and then, you know, having the wheels to hammer to the end. So,
John Nichols calls that rabbit hunting.
Yeah. I guess, yeah, it is rabbit hunting, but you could, it's a very, you know, distinct, art of cougar hunting. I think that.
Well, when you're up front, it's cougars when you get that award.
Hey, I have a quick question because I've never been there and I will never be there. And Dom, you have been there and Katie, you've been there. Do front runners need to be motivated by their pacer and crew?
I'd say for me, it's like a self-feeding fire if my crew gets in on it, because like for me at AC, you know, I'd never, you know, beat Jorge before, you know, and it was like, hey, you're reeling him in, and he was having a bad day, and it wasn't like, you know, quite a fair fight when he was blowing up, but just the fact that they were getting so excited, you know, that they were like, hey, we're going to crew the winner today. You know, this is really good if we can keep pushing them and, you know, and stuff. And that's, I think that just really like, you know, got me stoked that I had like all these, I was doing something for my crew that was really like rewarding and exciting for them. And I think if you're crewing someone at the front, you know, if they're making up spots or if they're getting top 10 or whatever, you know, get excited for them. Say, hey, you're still doing, you know, this really well. Or, hey, you moved up. Hey, you're kicking ass. Hey,
they're part of the team.
Yeah.
And very much part of it.
And, you know, I think the reason that we do races in general is to sort of, you know, measure ourselves against others in front of other people. You know, we like to, you know, stroke the ego a little bit. And if your crew is stroking your ego, you're just going to, you know, work that much harder.
How about you, Katie?
I would say it definitely. And I think it relates back to depending on what your goals were going into the race. So for example, like my goal is never to win because normally that just seems too far off to me. It's normally just a time goal because kind of come to the realization I can't really control when anybody else's race is doing. All I can do is do my best. And, you know, at one point last year that happened to be leading a 100-mile race. And I always figured that if that had happened to me, that I would be like beyond stoked and I would just float on fumes all the way in. And instead, when I got to that last aid station, I wanted to sit down and die. I was so destroyed. And I think not that I ever would have actually quit, but I definitely needed the encouragement to keep pushing really hard, because for me, my goal in that had been a certain time and I had gotten lost earlier in the race and then I had slowed down and I wasn't going to get that time anymore. And I also had started to realize that the next woman was very far behind me. So I didn't really have a lot of motivation to go very fast in the last 7 miles or so. And so I really needed, you know, Dom was with me and he kept pushing me as far as using that whole thing of getting caught, even though I was pretty sure she was very, very far behind me. That was good. And also just to keep me moving forward. Like he was very good in like, you know, every step is one closer to the finish. The quicker that we can do it, the sooner that it can be over. Because for me, there wasn't a whole lot of motivation anymore because I'd already lost the time that I wanted to do. And just winning actually wasn't that big of a motivator for me, which sounds weird, but in all honesty, it wasn't.
You know, you bring up that point, the sooner we get this done, the sooner we're finished, you know, and that can be a motivator a lot of times. I'm just going to keep running through this because I am tired of being out here and I'm going to push myself through this. I'm going to run through this flat when I was thinking about run walking it. I'm just going to keep running because I am tired of this. And sometimes, tell me if you guys agree with this, sometimes it's just as easy to run as it is to walk. In fact, sometimes it feels even a little bit better to run than to walk.
Absolutely. Yeah. I totally agree with that.
You know, I'm going to take a turn on the trail here.
Like the time we got lost, Scott?
Yeah. We're just a trail over from the course.
Yeah, it was parallel.
We'll both get to the finish.
Good.
I'm going to ask the question, and I will answer first because I have an answer.
Good.
And you guys can think about it.
All right.
What are some strategies, because Dom and Katie, you both are pacing at Western States, what are some strategies that you plan on using with your runner? And I'm going to say one of the things that I learned from Don that I've used in pacing is to make sure as you're coming up on an aid station to talk with your runner and have a plan of attack when you get to that aid station. So you're talking to your runner and you say, okay, we're a half mile out. And at this aid station, Mr. Runner, you know, I know you need to get some real food in you. You know, what kind of food do you think you're going to want? What sounds good? Well, I think watermelon sounds good, or I think a piece of pizza sounds good. Okay, so you're going to go in there. I'm going to take your water bottles. I'll get those filled for you. I want you to go to the buffet. I want you to get a piece of pizza. I want you to get three pieces of watermelon and get out of the aid station. And I'll catch up to you with your filled water bottles.
Mm, don't mule.
So, well, that's not muling.
Okay.
But what I'm saying is have a plan of attack and make sure that you're in and out of the aid station as quick and efficiently as you can, and don't let them dawdle in the aid station. So that's one of my strategies as a pacer, is to make sure that those aid stations are not dawdle stations.
Good. You guys ready? Because if not, I'm ready.
Go ahead.
All right. And the one that I used on you, Scott, was, you know, Scott wasn't excited about eating a lot on those last 25 miles. And so I negotiated with him. And I said, and he needed fuel. And that's one of the, he was getting empty and he really needed some. So my negotiation with Scott was, you can walk as long as you're eating. And so he grabbed as much food, more food on a buffet plate. Those looked like Thanksgiving when he was walking away from that aid station, because the agreement was as long as he was putting food in his mouth, he could walk. And then
Don would say, hey, it's time to run. I go, nope, I still have some food here. I'm still eating.
But you always have to be chewing and swallowing to be walking. It was no just carrying and walking. So
that was a great strategy, by the way.
It helped you eat a lot. We got a lot more calories in that way. All right, guys.
You know, like the, I don't know. I'm actually like playing some jokes for Tim. Keep on his toes.
That's okay. We're playing this after Western States, so you can go ahead and show us what they are.
If he snorts like a gel and, like, you know, he laughs like too hard, then everyone will know that was my fault. I'm just gonna like ask him for like random things that he shouldn't have on him in the middle of the race. It'll be like, you know, do you have any condoms, Tim? I mean, I just really need one right now.
That's good. You're distracting the runner. You know, keeping them thinking about other things, off topic, which is usually I'm tired and when is this done?
And the more like just random it is, the more it just sort of helps them remember that they actually are a human being and they don't, you know, have to, you know, they can breathe a little bit, they can relax, they can sort of be more in a better mindset to make, you know, important decisions. I think, you know, in life and in racing especially, is like you don't want to make decisions out of fear. And no one's really afraid when they're laughing normally, you know.
Yeah.
People stop laughing when they're afraid. But hopefully I'll still get him to smile a little bit, and so I'll show that he's ready to make good decisions all day.
You know, I'm gonna throw something out real quick that just made me laugh. I think it was yesterday. I'm going to bring up Facebook.
Okay.
A fellow runner around this area that we both know, Anthony Brantley,
right,
posted a photo of the Western States Pacer shorts that he has purchased for his pacer. I mean, for his pacing duties, and they are called the BOA Elite Split Leg Print Short Leopard.
Oh.
So they're pretty much a very short dolphin short in a leopard print. And I think that's very funny. I think that to have him show up the aid station and have his runner come in and see him standing there in those ridiculous shorts, I think is going to lighten his spirits.
Well, good. I'm glad that he'll go that far for his runner. Maybe that says what we should all do. We should bend over backwards to help our runner complete their goal. Katie, to you on the pacer, your pacer strategy.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, you know, you guys hit upon all the technical things that you should do, but so we've kind of taken a turn for the alternate strategies, since part of your part of the reason why you're there is to kind of keep them in a good, positive place. Believe it or not, a tactic that I've used in everyone that I have paced is singing. And mind you, I am not a very good singer, but I sing to myself out on the trail a lot when I'm hurting really badly. And I have kind of an arsenal of songs that I think everybody will know, and I'll try a few if they don't. And even if they don't join in, a lot of times they're like, oh, sorry, am I bothering you? No, keep singing. And there's, I don't know, it sounds silly, but there is, you know, there's a lot of research out there that, you know, it's impossible to be in a bad mood when you're laughing. It's impossible to be in a bad mood when you're singing. It really does make people feel better. Or at least if it's a song that you know or something, kind of gives you something else to focus on or something to, I like to do songs that have some sort of response or something to them, because you sometimes you'll get a gruff like, hey, or whatever in the background as well. So I don't know. It sounds weird, but it's worked.
You know, that reminded me a couple years ago when I was pacing someone. We had we actually passed a runner and his pacer, and that pacer had his iPod hooked up to some portable speakers that he had put in a fanny pack. And he was just blasting music out of these speakers, and I thought that was very funny.
Let me help you with this, Scott, because this proves how your mind goes to mush.
Was that you?
No, that was your Western States coming through Sandy Bottom, that section.
Oh, that's when I was running it,
right? And the guy had a backpack, and it was a big speaker coming on that thing, and it was okay. Like, yeah. So it's funny where our minds do go.
Yeah, I thought it was a different race.
Well. I'm about singing Kesha through Death Valley a few years ago.
it was actually really funny because...
And Kelly Clarkson, too.
Yeah, there was like a road crew working on like some stretch of highway coming into Lone Pine. It was like 105 degrees or something at that point. And I'd been up for like 24 hours, and the my pacer at the time, Jamil Curry, was just playing my MP3 player through his speakers, and I was like, I was going pretty nuts. I had like decided I needed to roll up my shorts, you know, because they were too long, I thought, so I needed to, you know, aerate a little bit better. And I had like my shirt off, and I was like my eyes were kind of like puffy from the sand blasting and everything, and yeah, I was like just half-heartedly singing it, and I don't think that road crew had ever seen like anything that entertaining in Death or in the Valley area.
Nice. Hey, you know, on a serious note, we talked about roles of a pacer. I'd like to just for a moment talk about the role of the responsibility of the runner, because the way I think about it is, it's my job as the runner that's going to be paced is to show up with something for the pacer to work with. You know, I can't take myself through, we'll use States as an example because that's topical and coming up, and we've used it throughout the podcast. You can't go mile zero through 62 and show up spent and say, well, here I am, pacer, take me the other 38. That's not fair to them. We have a responsibility to give them something to work with. So we need to manage our race properly, manage our body properly, and show up with the good 38 miles left in us.
And on the flip side, I want to go back to something that Katie said about crews that also applies to pacers, and that is, remember, this is the racer's race.
Mm-hmm.
You as a pacer are the servant, and you need to let them run their race, and don't have any ego as a pacer.
I like it. Well, Dominic and Katie both have a...
I have one last thing.
You have another thing, Scott?
I have one last thing.
Well, let's get it.
How important is it for a pacer? You know, Dom, you're not going to have to worry about this because you will be finished and have a shower before the sun goes down. But Katie, sure. It sounds like that you'll be running through the night. As a pacer, what is your responsibility at night?
I don't know how to answer this exactly.
Well, let me lead you down the dark path.
Okay.
I think that although there is no muling at most races, you're not supposed to be carrying anything, but I think it's important as a pacer to have maybe a couple flashlights in case something happens and it's for a safety, you know, reason. Make sure that your light is a very bright one so that you can maybe help the person see and have some depth perception. I think that's important.
I've seen plenty of pacers with very dull lamps and racers with very bright lamps, and it probably didn't start that way.
Right.
It probably was a swap.
Right.
You've got to sacrifice yourself for your pacer for your runner anytime you can.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. I know where you're going now. Definitely. I always make sure I have fresh batteries in my lamp. And then in addition to that, I always make sure to figure out where the runner wants me to run, because sometimes your light can cast shadows on them as well. So like I said, I normally like a runner to run behind me, but depending on their lamp, I might actually want them to run in front of me if it's weird. And it's also depending on the trail. Like, great example is, you know, when I was back in Ozark, it's like super rocky and lots of leaves covering the rocks and stuff. And so every step, you don't know what you're doing. So at that case, I wanted Dom actually to be in front of me so that he would fall first if show me where not.
Nice.
Whereas something like Western States, I definitely wanted him behind me and kind of off to the side, because the last 20 miles of Western, it's pretty flat and well-groomed trail, but there's weird like dips and stuff where your depth perception can be really off, particularly if you're using a headlamp versus a handheld lamp. I learned in retrospect that's why a lot of people like to use something handheld for that race in particular, because you kind of, it's that weird thing where you like step off and you didn't know it was like lower than the other, and it's just very jarring. So I always kind of try to set up what is more comfortable. I've also had to be the person to block another runner that whose light was like way too bright. So I kind of try to like stay in front of them until they could pass so that it wasn't making my runner have a headache. It was very weird situation. So I think the lighting is one. And number two, definitely if you're crewing and pacing, insisting that you get a nap in at some point, because you could be out there all night into the next day. And if you're tired as well, you're not going to be making those decisions very well either. So particularly this applies to if you've been crewing all day, making sure those last couple aid stations before you start pacing, really trying to get a nap in and making sure you're fresh for your runner, maybe a Red Bull or two.
Nice. You know, Scott, she had a full barrel full of ammunition there after you got her on the right course. That's some good stuff, Katie. I like it.
So I have one other little quick question. I want to get your opinion on this.
Okay.
Should your pacer... probably most courses you don't have cell phone coverage, but in some you do. Should your pacer have a cell phone to maybe notify the crew, you know, where you are, how you're doing, and notify them? What are your feelings about that? Is that cheating?
No, I always carry a cell phone, whether if it's not working, it's just to take photos and help them. I mean, I guess that's another thing too, is that it's always really nice to, especially if you're not this is kind of a sidebar, but if you're not the runner, like I know I've always, every time I've paced, I've always taken a ton of pictures for my runner, and they've always really, really appreciated having
that.
That's
a great point.
And just trying to capture different parts of the day. But anyway, so I either use my cell phone for that, or definitely, I'll keep it on when I can. I know, like, for when Dom ran Hard Rock, it was when I was going to be within a mile from town, I was definitely going to get service, and I was out of breath, but calling his crew to let them know he was coming, or also fielding texts from his mom, and I was trying to text while running, while trying to keep up with him. It was interesting, but yeah, I always carry my cell phone.
Okay.
Dominic, how about you? You want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think in this modern day world, we love Twitter, we love I Run Far, we love seeing pictures. So, yeah, it's definitely not cheating, unless the race tells you you can't. But no, it's definitely not cheating. You should, I think, you know, as any normal runner, they like to remember the good times, and they like to see the bad times when they actually have clear vision, you know?
Yeah. Like, I really looked that bad. Why'd you let me continue? My goodness. Was I really green?
Yeah. Well, it's funny, 'cause like you always have like either like rose colored, you know, eyes or
glasses.
Well, glasses, but
your eyes turn rose too.
Yeah, sometimes your eyes. Yeah, like if you're in
The Red Bull.
Yeah, oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, red eyes. But you like, you know, you have like this like concept of like, oh man, this part of the race, I was so tired. And then you look at the picture and you're like, oh, I guess it looked all right, but I felt really bad.
Yeah, how many times have you had people say, you look pretty good, and you're thinking on the inside, I feel so awful. So maybe those pictures are good to see. Like you said, man, I was at my lowest point there, and you look at them, and you go, I was still coherent.
Yeah, and then, you know, you got to write a blog, so.
And so if we wanted to read your blog, where would we go?
I actually bought my name, so I'm just DominicGrossman.com.
Nice.
Yeah.
Katie?
I'm not that fancy.
It's $10. I'm not that fancy.
$10. I like. You should have left it alone. We thought $10,000. So Katie.
I think Katie has a good birthday present coming up, Dom.
Oh yeah. Hey.
Yeah, I don't think there's many Katie Disflinters out there in the world. So.
You better grab it before the podcast gets out.
Or maybe I'll go buy it and sell it to you.
Scott, be nice now. So where do we find you, Katie?
I'm at breakingexcellent.blogspot.com.
Awesome. We'll link those, Scott. And as speaking of linking, I want to there's a video out there, and I meant to say this earlier, but it's worth bringing back before we wrap up here, is there's a YouTube video clip, and I'll get that to you, Scott, so we can post it, of Timmy Olson running Western States last year. I'm sure you've seen it, both of you guys. And as he's running up into Michigan Bluff, and that is one difficult climb, and it gets steeper at the end, and the spot where this camera person has shot that video, he is just in the zone and he's just running, and I can see that image in my mind when I'm just working hard and trying to, you know, get up and do things, and he has just got such great focus in that clip. Well worth looking at. It's about halfway through, but the video captures him from the start, running effortlessly and having fun right behind the leaders that you were talking about in the beginning, Dominic, in the run, and then taking control, and then it's just a great little YouTube clip, and I really enjoyed it. You're going to have a great time out there, Dominic, getting a firsthand ride down that mountain with a phenomenal runner.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I think the history of the race is just like every year. It's just like how can it be any more competitive? And then it is more competitive, and it's more and more, you know, interesting and stuff. And it's gonna be awesome to be a part of the history. And I'm definitely gonna try to put in for next year and find a way into the race next year, because it's just too much to miss out on as a runner.
Absolutely,
it's an electric atmosphere for sure.
I have a question for Dom then. Who are you more excited to pace at Western States, me last year or Tim Olson this year?
We can edit this if it doesn't turn out okay.
You know, it actually is like a very tough question, because Katie was the second to last person in her 24 hours last year. So watching Katie, you know, like all day long, I was like doing the splits, like trying to like gauge, you know, how things would end up. And she just kept it really, really scary all day long. I thought, oh, she's putting it away. You know, she's banking some time here or something. She just always rode the 24-hour cuss, and she had no clue either. Too that was also pretty bad. Like I'd tell her, hey, you know, it's a good section. You know, you should try to run the next section a little bit faster, and she'd just say, no, I'm doing my own race. Don't ask me. You know, don't tell me what to do. Try to coach me. I'm doing this on my own. And then I ended up, you know, pacing her, and at mile like 94, she wanted to sit down and quit. And then I really interesting, because I realized I'd have to sit in the car all the way home with her saying, I was so close. So if Tim's race is really close this year, then We'll have to reevaluate that. But
didn't
I think
answer the question.
I think that they
he answered it just fine. Katie, go back and listen to the podcast. I'm covering for you, Dominic. All right.
Yes. So far, Katie's been the most exciting person to piece.
You should be a politician, Dominic. That you walked right around that question, and you sounded like you answered it.
I live with her, so this is a normal thing every night.
Well, you know, and I think, you know, on the topic of crew and pacer, if you knew she was close all the way through, you didn't sit there and go hound her and saying, you know, you were on the bubble. Each aid station, you need to pick this up. You left that out and just encourage her to move forward faster. So that's knowing your runner and knowing the person you're working with, and that's just real important. So I think that's a great illustration of why it's important to communicate and know who you're working with and know what motivates them, what button to push. And with that, I think we're ready to go out and see what happens at Western States.
Yeah, can't wait.
Well, excited to see you there as well.
Yeah.
I'll be there ready to find my pacer and being taken care of by my crew.
Well, thanks for joining us, Nation members. Make sure you go, if you're pacing or if you're crewing, go to trailrunnernation.com and pick up some performance-enhancing Coca Pellies. I think that a crew and a pacer should be wearing those. I think there is good karma by sporting the Coca Pelli.
Absolutely. And Dominic and Katie, I will have some Coca Pellies up there, so I'll get to see you. I'll make sure I get some in your hands.
All right.
Sounds good.
Good. We have new Ultra Pink now. You might be interested. Either one of you might be interested in sporting Ultra Pink. I'm not going to just point my finger.
Ultra Pink are just not for females. We've seen many real men wear Ultra Pink.
True.
For sure.
See us on Facebook and Twitter
at We Are a Nation. Now go out and run.
Mas. But what you done here is put yourself between a bullet and a target, and it won't be long before you're pulling yourself away. But what you done here is put yourself between a bullet and a target, and it won't be long before you're pulling yourself away. Years. She got a dark, dark wavy hair with a voice that you just